Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Aleph Umin Aleph, three lines down. The Gemara here is discussing the position of Rav Nachman, which seemingly indicates that he thinks that there is a din of chavata even in less than 10 tefachim, because he paskin that a shore that fell into an amatamayim, which at maximum is 6 tefachim deep, was a treifa because of the fact that of the impact it had when it fell. The risuke varim would make it into a treifa. So from that, it sounded like the Rav Nachman believes that there is chavata pachot mi asarat fachim. And the Gemara then says, then how does he deal with our Mishnah? And we ended off yesterday's Gemara with his explanation of Hevel, that he thinks that the difference between the 10 fachim and below 10 fachim in the Mishnah has to do with Hevel, and that there are different magnitudes or intensities of Hevel. There's Hevel that can cause mita, and then there's Hevel that can cause nezek. That's what we left off with. Now the Gemara is going to question this whole position of Rav Nachman that there really exists chavata with less than 10 tefachim. Eitve, beit ha-skila, the place of execution for those that were chayav, skila, stoning, hayak voashte komot, was 2 stories high. Ve'tani ala, and on that we have a qualification, a braita, that says v'koma shelo, and then there's his height itself. And that's really 3 stories high, not that that really makes a difference to our case over here, but there's the 2 stories of the building upon which he is standing, and then he, the height himself of his body is also as another level. There are 3 floors high. If you think like Rav Nachman that there is impact from hitting or crashing into the ground from less than 10 tefachim, then why are they throwing him off the building to kill him for skila from such a high point? This is based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which there learns that the chiyuv skila involves 2 parts of the process, the first of which is he's thrown off the building, and then after that he is stoned. They learned that out from the description by Mamad Har Sinai, which is Sako Yisakel Yoro Yireh. If anybody approaches the mountain and goes beyond the fenced off or guarded area of the mountain, then they will be stoned and Yoro Yireh, and they will be shot at. So there the Gemara learns from that there is a 2-step process with regards to Skila. There's Yoro, like to shoot or to eject, or to throw, and then there's sakol, to stone. And therefore, the first part of the process is to throw him off a high building, which usually killed him. If he was not killed by that, then they threw stones on him. They stoned him afterwards in order to finish him off. So the beginning of the process involves throwing him from a high enough point to which the impact, when he hits the ground, will kill him. According to Rav Nachman, if the impact from hitting the ground was enough at less than 3/10 tefachim, why are they taking him up so high? According to your reasoning, why are you putting him up 3 stories high? Just put him up 10 tefachim. If the Chachamim indicated that a bore that's 10 tefachim deep can kill someone, then that'd be sufficient. 10 tefachim. Why are we putting him 3 stories high? Ela k'Rav Nachman. But it's because of this memory of Rav Nachman. Damar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Barabuah, Makro, the Pasuk says, V'hafta l'reacha kamocha, that you have to love thy neighbor like thyself. Bror lo mita yafa. You have to pick for him the best death possible, meaning that the same way that you would want the most expedient and painless death, the same thing you would want for the individuals being executed, you'd want the same thing for them. Ihachi, if that's the case, nigvet fei, then we should lift it up higher. Why don't we throw him off of 5 stories, 6 stories, to make sure that he definitely dies from the impact of the fall? Because in that case, if the body comes down, and with such a hard impact, it'll cause the body to fall apart or dismember, and therefore it'll make it disgusting. So we try to pick a height that's high enough that will result in certain death, but not high enough that it results in the body falling to pieces or smashing to pieces when it hits the ground below. Now, what's interesting here from the assumption of the Gemara is that the Gemara is comparing a case here of Beit HaSkila, which involves a human being, to a case of a shore, which involves an animal. And the Gemara here says, well, if the animal requires less than 10 tefachim to die, so too the human being will require less than 10 tefachim to die. That means that we equate the death of an animal to the death of a human being, or, in essence, the trefot of an animal and the trefot of Adam can be interchanged, or they have the same criteria. And the Balei Tosafot point out that that is difficult for the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam. He says, "Hashta midame trefot Adam l'trefot behema." He says, "Vekasha l'Rabbeinu Tam." That's a problem for Rabbeinu Tam. "De mechalek b'nem," who says that there is a difference between them, that you cannot compare and contrast the trefot of an Adam and a Behema, because they are different. Human beings are different than animals. And so because of that, you can't compare them. But here the Gemara, without batting an eye, compares the killing of an individual to the killing of a Behema. And here we're talking about trefot. We're talking about the causing of the death of the animal, or causing the death of the individual. So from here, the Tosfot says it's a big problem for the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam. Interestingly enough, the Rashash, on commenting on this, says he thinks that there's not a question on the Rabbeinu Tam, because he says, it's not a question of Rabbeinu Tam. The Taimo de Rabbeinu Tam. Who? What is the reasoning behind the Rabbeinu Tam that he differentiates between a human being and an animal? Mishum da Adam, itlay mazlo. Because man has mazel. We saw that earlier in the Masechta with regards to the Shor Mu'ad, that there's a difference between a Shor Mu'ad the Behemad and a Shor Mu'ad the Adam. Because Adam, yeshlo mazel. Adam has a mazel, and therefore he's able to survive. He has protection or divine protection. And so that Adam has a different criteria than animals. And if that's the case, the reasoning behind the Rabbeinu Tam as to why trefot by an animal cannot be compared to the trefot by an Adam is because they are different. They're completely different entities. It's not just that man is a part of the animal kingdom and he's just a big animal or a type of a species within the animal kingdom. Man has other factors involved, including this mazel. V'halcha kvar istalik mazle. In this case, the Adam is no longer an Adam. He has become a behema because he is now facing certain death. De omeid lehareg mikol makom. He's going to die no matter what at this point in time. Because if he doesn't die from the impact of the fall, he's going to be stoned afterwards. So over here, the Adam and the Behema can be compared, because this Adam no longer has the status of an Adam in terms of mazel, because all protection has been removed. He's going to be put to death, he's going to be executed in this case. And then he says, in addition to that, Ba'od, the Hocha Adarabah. Here it's just the opposite. Mazlehu im yamut miyat. And he says here, it's actually the other way around. It would be good mazel for him to die immediately, so it's painless, and he doesn't feel anything. So his mazel should be working in the opposite direction. V'nachon bezrat Hashem. He says that's a good way to explain the shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, and not have this be a stira. In Okanami, generally, Adam and Behema are separate, and you cannot compare their dinoim by trefot. Over here is an exception to the rule, because over here the Adam looks much more like a Behema than he does like an Adam. Gemara continues, Eteve, ki pol hanofel mimenu. This is talking about the mitzvah makeh, the requirement to put a fence around the roof of your house so that no one falls off the roof of your house. So there the pasuk says, ki pol hanofel mimenu. We don't want you not to have a fence there, because if you lack a fence, then someone will fall off the top of the roof. It says, mimenu velo litocho. Means from it and not into it. Okay, it said, what is the difference? Or what is the deal being made here? If his house sits adjacent to the Reshut HaRabim, but, for instance, it's in Har Nof, it's in Ramat Beit Shemesh, it's on the side of a mountain, and since it's on the side of the mountain, it's graded up the mountain. That means that it's possible that the road is above the roof of this individual's house, and the road is more than 10 tefachim or 10 tefachim above the roof of this individual's house. And the individual falls from the road above onto his roof. Patur. Over there he is Patur. Amukami menu asarat fachim. On the other hand, if the Reshut HaRabim is 10 fachim below his roof, v'nafal mitocho l'tocha, and he falls from the house, the high bayit, the roof of the house, l'tocha, into the Reshut HaRabim, chayav, then he is responsible. Now, first of all, Patur and chayav are very difficult words over here, because with regards to makeh, makeh is a din nisur. It's whether you have to put up a makeh or you don't have to put up a makeh. It has nothing to do with being chayav or patur. Chayav or patur are usually terminology that is used with regards to obligations or monetary obligations. Rashi says the chayav and patur literally mean chayav to put up a makeh or patur to put up a makeh. It's not talking about responsibility or liability. It's simply talking about obligation. It's therefore, if your roof is above the Reshut HaRabim by more than 10 tefachim or more, you are obligated to put on a makeh. If the Reshut HaRabim is above your roof by more than 10 tefachim, you have no obligation to put up the makeh, because it's not the height of your house that's causing it, it's the height of the Reshut HaRabim that's causing it. And that's the difference between mimenu, from the roof out, he falls, and not litocho, not falling into the roof from somewhere else. And so Rashi reads it very simply as patur and chayav with regards to the obligation to the mitzvah of makeh, or not to do the mitzvah of makeh. The Rashba, on the other hand over here, says that it has to do with chayav and patur with regards to dinei shemaim, or let's say dinei shemaim. This comes up a lot with regards to when an individual has an exemption from making restitution or paying compensation. When we say that they're exempt or they're patur, does that mean they're patur the gamrei and they have no responsibilities whatsoever? Or are we saying that they are patur because we can't bring them to trial? We can't, in a court, compel them to pay. But that doesn't mean that they don't have an obligation over here or some responsibility to make restitution or pay compensation to this individual. And therefore, there's what we call, let's say, tzeit shamayim. There's still an obligation, an unenforceable obligation, for this individual to make restitution. And so the chayav and patur over here might relate to the monetary matter, as the Rashba says, but the monetary matter not from dinei adam, but dinei shamayim. Are you obligated to take care of this individual because you were the cause, even though it was an indirect cause of the death of this individual? Or do you have nothing to do with it because it wasn't your responsibility at all? And that's the way to explain chayav and patur according to the Rashba over here. The Gemara says, v'isak adatcho, yesh chavata ba'pachot miyud. If you believe like Rav Nachman, that impact can happen and cause death with less than 10 tefachim, lamali asara. Why do you require a minimum of 10 tefachim before you're obligated to put up a fence around your roof? Amalei, shiny bayit, the chol apachot me'asara, lav bayitu. The definition or the 10 tefachim here has nothing to do with the obligation of the ma'akeh in and of itself. It has to do with the requirement for a house. The way that the Torah describes ma'akeh is we're talking about the roof of a house. And within Chazal, the Gemara in Sukkah speaks about this a lot, the minimum amount to be classified as a bayit is something that is 10 tefachim high. So that's why we're speaking about 10 tefachim over here, not because that is the determinant of chavata or whether you need a makeh. It's simply that's the story in the Torah that we're talking about a house. Well, if you want a house, you need to have something that's a minimum of 10 tefachim high. Ihochi, hashtanami, dahavi me'evrai asara. Wait a minute. If that's the case, then you only have 10 tefachim on the outside. The description here is the height of the house from the outside, not the height of the house from the inside. So if it's 10 tefachim on the outside, dominate tikra umaziva, you have to take away the ceiling and the plaster that will take up space, and migavai, on the inside, they will reduce the amount of the 10 tefachim, and therefore you don't have 10 tefachim on the inside, and that's the key element of a house, is that it has 10 tefachim of airspace inside in order to be classified as a house. Amalei kagon dechak mikavai, that he dug down, meaning that, yes, the house is 10 tefachim high on the outside, the roof and the plaster take up some space, but then he dug into the ground to get back whatever space was taken up by the roof, the ceiling, and the plaster. It says, Yehochi, ki lo havi nami me'avrai asara, mishkach halad havi migavai asara. They said, well, if you're going to already set up the case that way, why do you need it to be 10 tefachim on the outside at all? It could be 5 tefachim high on the outside, and then he digs into the floor of that area, 5 tefachim deep, and now he got his 10 tefachim on the inside. Kachon dechak ba'tfei, he just dug deeper. So if that's going to be your answer already, then you don't need 10 tefachim at all. Ella, so now we know whenever the Gemara uses the word Ella, we've spoken about this numerous times, that means the Gemara has now rejected the assumption it's had until now. The assumption until now is that Rav Nachman believes that there is chavata less than 10 tefachim. But the Gemara, by saying Ella, is saying, we're leaving that behind. That is not true. Hainu taimid Rav Nachman, the Savar. This is the reasoning behind Rav Nachman. Nothing to do with the chavata less than tefachim, but mikresa de Torah la'ara kamavi. From the underbelly of the animal to the ground, how much airspace is there? Arba'a. There is 4 tefachim. Over here, the Rashba says that 4 tefachim seems very minimal, and it definitely is more. But he says, at minimum, it is 4 tefachim, and I'll see in a second why that is. Arita de delai, the amata mayim, the water channel, kamavi. What is the depth of that? Shita at 6 tefachim. So he said in yesterday's daf, amata mayim, the name comes from the fact that it's an ama deep. By an amah wide, and that's why it's called a matamayim. And an amah can be 4, 5, 6 tefachim. Here the Gemara is saying that this amah is 6 tefachim. So if you have an amah that's 6 tefachim, plus 4 tefachim that the shore has its underbelly raised off the ground. And that's why the Rashba says the Gemara used 4, because 4 just filled in the missing amount that you need to get to 10. But technically, it's probably much higher. You just need at minimum 4 tefachim, and that's what the Gemara says over here. So now, hasara. Now you have the 10 tefachim that you need in order to have the impact of the chavata be a killer impact. Yishtakach ka michbat mi'asarahu de ka michbat. Mi'asarahu de machbat. So from that, what you see is that when it falls down, it ends up falling down and impacting from 10 tefachim. Because the base of the Amat HaMayim is 6 tefachim deep, and the animal itself is raised off the ground, meaning the underbelly of the animal is raised off the ground a minimum of 4 tefachim. Together, that means that the underbelly of the animal is a minimum of 10 tefachim above the base of the Amat HaMayim. And for that reason, he's now fallen or impacted 10 tefachim, and that already brings him into the world of Mita, or the possibility that the Chavotah could cause death. And that would explain Rav Nachman's position before when the animal fell into the Amat HaMayim, why he said when the owner shechted it right away that it's a treifa, because he never checked for the problem of risuk ivarim, because there was a high enough fall for the animal to be impactful and possibly kill the animal in this case. Ela matznitan dektani ma bor shu kedei lamit yud tfachim, av ko sheish bo kedei lamit yud tfachim, b'shita nami sagyo. Why does our Mishnah say that the minimum requirement of a boar is 10 tfachim? It should be that the minimum requirement of a boar is 6 tfachim, because any animal, or at least a shore that's walking around, is at least a minimum of 4 tfachim off the ground, so then all I need is an additional 6 tfachim. Why does the Mishnah say you need 10 tfachim in the boar? So Amrei matnitan di ingandar la boar. The case of the Mishnah is a case where he either, we'll call it, rolled or slipped into the boar. It's not a case where he's walking and then he's toppled over or he falls over into the boar, whereby the underbelly is now 10 tefachim high, and then you have the depth of the boar to sum up to the 10 tefachim. But here's a case where he's already on the ground. He's lying on the ground. He's slipping on the ground. His body or his underbelly is already on the ground. There, he would need a full 10 tefachim in the boar in order to have it be a chavotah that could impact or be life-threatening. And so that's why the Mishnah just gives you the standard yud tefachim to tell you, even if the animal's on the ground or sliding along or rolling along, 10 tefachim would suffice. Of course, if he's standing up, then you might need less than 10 tefachim. In that case, you just need it to sum up to 10 tefachim. Okay, now we move on to the next Mishnah. Bor shoshnei shutafin. You have a bor that belongs to two partners. Avar alav arishon. If the first one passed by, velo kiso, and he didn't cover it. Vasheni, velo kiso. And then the second one walked by and didn't cover it. Hasheni, chayav. The second one is responsible or culpable in this case. You can see here on the side that the Girsa Tarif in the Rambam is that a Rishon Chayab, that the first one is Chayab. Well, we'll go with the Girsa that we have in front of us, which is a Sheni Chayab, the second one is Chayab over here. As Rashi points out, you can't just simply say that the guy walked by the boar. You can't translate the word Avar to mean he walked by. Because if the first guy walked by and didn't cover it, and then the second guy walked by and didn't cover it, why is the second guy any more liable than the first guy? The second guy did nothing different than the first guy. He walked by and did nothing. So if the first guy walked by and did nothing, he should also be responsible for the boar. Therefore, Rashi says avar is not taken in the sense of passing by, but avar means that he utilized the boar. The first guy utilized the boar, and then the second guy utilized the boar. And the first guy, after leaving, utilizing the boar, he left the second guy there. That's why this first guy has no responsibility, and the second guy has all the responsibility, because he was left behind utilizing the boar at that time. And therefore, all of the responsibility sits with him because the first guy has left already. And that will become more clear as we read the Gemara. So, Amrei, boar shel shnei shutafim heichem ishkachala. How exactly do you have a case of boar that involves two partners? Hanicha isvir lan ki Rabbi Akiva. That would be easy to explain if we hold like Rabbi Akiva. Damar boar b'shuto chayav. Because Rabbi Akiva believes that a boar in your private domain or under your ownership, you are responsible for. So, mishgachala b'chatzer shel shnehem, u'bor shel shnehem. It was a case where they were partners, dual ownership of the land around the boar, as well as the boar itself. V'ifkiru shutam, v'lo ifkiru boran. And then they gave over their property that surrounded the boar to the rabim, or to the reshut rabim, but they maintained ownership over the boar. So there you have a boar that has partners as owners. That is something that is chayav, or boar, that is spoken about in the Torah. Elias v'irlan, boar b'shuto patur. If you hold like Rabbi Shmuel, that boar in his personal possession that he owns is patur. Hechem ishkakala d'chayev alei. Then when are you chayav for boar that's only b'shut rabim, in the public domain? O b'shut rabim, boar shel shnei shutafim, hechem ishkakala. How do you ever have a boar of two partners in the reshut rabim? Remember that in the reshut rabim, if you're going to be chayav, we have the statement of Rabbi Yishmael from back on Daf Chavtet that there are two things that are not enan b'shuto shel adam, that they're not owned, they're not in the possession of an individual. Ve'asana katuv kilein bishuto, and then the pasuk or the Torah places them into his possession. So over here, it's just a deemed ownership for responsibility. So if that's the case, how do you have partners that own something in the Rishut Rabim? Nobody can own anything in the Rishut Rabim. So how can you speak about partners? You can only speak about liability or responsibility. So how do you have two parties that are responsible if they don't have a joint ownership, because there is no such thing as ownership in the Rishut Rabim? So the Gemara says, let's try some possibilities. Either Shavu Shaliach Tarvayu, if they both jointly appointed a Shaliach, an agent, to go ahead and dig out the Rishut Rabim on their behalf, Zil Karilan, go and dig out in the Rishut Rabim, and he carried out his agency and went ahead and dug out a pit in the middle, or a ditch in the middle of the Rishut Rabim. They would not be responsible because of the principle, Ein Shliach Lidvar Aveira. There's no such thing as an agent for doing something wrong. So they're not going to be responsible over here. The person who dug it out is going to be responsible. As Rashi says over here, because the din of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira stems from the fact that if he has a choice between listening to those that have appointed him as an agent or the word of his master, which is Akash Baruch Hu, Svaru Hu, Darminan Lai, Divrei Rav, Divrei Tamid, Divrei Mishomim. If you have a choice to listen to God and listen to another human being, who are you going to listen to? You're going to listen to God. God said, don't do this. So then, obviously, you shouldn't do it, irrespective of what these people are asking to do, or the defense of just following orders does not carry weight, is not a legal defense here, because you have to listen and you have to do what's right, irrespective of what other people are asking you to do or hiring you to do. And since it's wrong to go ahead and dig out the Rishut Rabim, you can't then say, I'm not responsible for what I did because other people asked me to do it. Now, there's a number of issues that come up over here. First of all, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira assumes that there's some sort of Aveira that is being perpetrated over here. What happened here? What Aveira is doing? When you dig a bore, you are responsible for the damage that happens to the bore. But what Aveira did you do? This goes back to our introduction to the Masechta, where we spoke about this idea that whether when a person is a Mazik, or he creates a Mazik, is there an isur min haTorah, or is there simply a requirement to make restitution or to pay compensation, but there's no isur? From this Gemara, it seems like there is an isur that's involved over here, because here, the digging of the bore in the Rishut Rabim only involves creation of a mazik, which he's going to be responsible for monetarily. Who says he did any aveira or anything wrong over here? So there are a number of suggestions here as to what the aveira is. Given that assumption that there is an aveira over here, that means that there's an iser involved in generating a mazik or creating nezek in the Rishut Rabim. As to what that is, one possibility is, if you look at Rashi and Daf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, Rashi and Daf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph talks about the nafal, that the shore fell down into a bore in the Rishut Rabim. And over there Rashi says, V'hai kriya havi kore chayav, de'en shliach ledvar aveira, Dasur lekalkel Rishut Rabim. So in Daf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, Rashi says that the Aveira over here, or the problem is the fact that it's also lekalkel Rishut Rabim. You are violating the restriction of ruining the Rishut Rabim. Now, the Mishnah Lamelech on the Rambam says that if that's the case, you know, he doesn't necessarily quote Rashi, but he gives the same explanation that the Isur here is an Isur lekalkel to Rishut Rabim. He says, but that's only an Isur Derabanan. What you see from that is that even by an Isur Derabanan, there's still the principle of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira applies even by Isurim Derabanan, not just by Isurim D'Oraita. So Rashi says the Isur here is the Kalkel Tereshut Rabim, the Mishnah Melech, from that extrapolates and says that that means that Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira is a principle that applies even B'dine Derabanan. So that's one possibility as to what the Isur is over here. The other possibility that is suggested by Rav Chanan Wasserman over here is that it stems from what we just saw in the Gemara before, v'hafta l'reacha kamocha, that you have to love thy neighbor like thyself. There is a reformulation that the Gemara gives in explaining what v'hafta l'reacha kamocha is, the alach sani l'chavarach lo tavid, whatever you hate, don't do to your friend. I mean, it's the negative formulation of v'hafta l'reacha kamocha, which is do to your friend what you would love. The opposite is also true. Things that you hate, don't do to your friend. So that'd be the problem over here, or the Isser that you're violating over here, is you're violating V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, because you're doing something in the Rishut HaRabim, which you wouldn't want someone else to do in the Rishut HaRabim. You wouldn't enjoy that. You wouldn't appreciate if someone dug a bore. So therefore, if you dig a bore, that's also not appreciated by the other parties, and it's a violation of V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. The Meshech Chochma over here says what, Fred, you suggested, that the problem here is Bifnei Iver lo titen mikshol, that you're putting an obstacle, you're putting a problem, a mazik in the Rishut HaRabim, is a problem of Bifnei Iver lo titen mikshol, in its more literal level, at its more literal approach, which is a bigger question with regards to Bifnei Iver lo titen mikshol. Chazal changed the meaning of Bifnei Iver lo titen mikshol from its pashtut, its simplest understanding, to be giving bad advice, to causing people to doing Averot. The question then is, once Chazal interpreted it that way, does the simple meaning of the Pasuk still remain? And that is a machloket in the Rishonim, as if you really just put a stumbling block in front of an Iver, are you in violation of that Din Doraita Min HaTorah? Once Chazal reinterpreted it, did they reinterpret it to the point where the simple explanation doesn't exist anymore? Or is that an enhancement of the simple explanation? If you believe that the simple explanation still exists, then this could be under the auspices of that Isser of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Mikshol, that don't put stumbling blocks, don't put dangerous items in the Rishut HaRabim, and that's how the Meshech Chochma explains what the Isser is over here. But again, this is part of that bigger discussion we had at the beginning of the Masechta as to what the Isser is with regards to doing Hezek, but over here you can see that the Gemara clearly thinks that there is an Aveira involved. V'idakara hai chamisha, v'hai chamisha. If one guy dug 5 tfachim, and the other guy dug 5 tfachim, they each contributed 5 of the 10, when the second guy digs the second 5, he basically removes the first guy from the picture, because the first guy who dug 5 tvachim didn't do anything that could kill. It's just 5 tvachim deep. The second guy who takes another 5 and brings it to 10, he's the one who made it into a killer boar, and he's going to be the one who is responsible. Now that has to do with machloket Rabbi and the Chachamim, which we're going to see in one second. Anicha the Rabbi, unin zakim. You could explain it, or you could come to a conclusion that that would be shutafimir if you're speaking in Rabbi and about Nezek. Mishkachala, then you would find that case. Elo the Rabbi ulemita, if you're talking about Rabbi's position with regards to death, ulerabbanan ben lemita ben nezakim, and for the Rabbanan, whether it's for death or damage, heche mishkachala. How do we find such a case? In a second, the Gemara is going to come back and ask us, what is this din of Rabbi and Rabbanan? So I'm going to defer to them, we'll come back in a second and explain this. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan Kagon Shakrush Nehem Chulia Bavatachat. The case where they both took out a level at once, Vishlimul Asara, and then they completed the boar to 10 Tvachim. So that's how the case where they are Shutafim over here, is because they acted jointly to create the final stage of the boar that made it into a killer boar, brought it from 9 Tvachim to 10 Tvachim. They took out that one layer. The Chulia is usually something of a pile or an area around. It usually refers to chulia, is above the bore, the area that's built up around the bore. But all likelihood is here is they took out of the depth of the bore a tefach to bring it up to the top to put around the edges of the bore. But since they created the bore simultaneously, bringing it to 10 tefachim, they have now joint responsibility for the bore, and that's the scenario in the Mishnah where you have shnei shutafim. The Gemara asks, my Rabbi, my Rabbanan. What is this machlok between Rabbi and the Rabbanan that you were referencing before? The Tanya, Echano chofer bor tish'a, uba acher vishlima la'asara. The first individual digs a pit, a ditch that is 9 tvachim deep. The second one comes along and then deepens it till it reaches 10 tvachim. Acharon chayav. The Chachamim believe that the latter one who extended it to 10 tvachim, he is fully responsible for the bor. Rabbi Omer, achar acharon mita. That's true with regards to death. The second one is fully responsible. When it comes to damages or nezek that's done, they are joint partners over here. So what the Chachamim say is, if you make a significant change in the bor, then you become the owner of the bor or the bala bor at that point in time because of the significant change that you made to it. A bor that is 9 tefachim deep has the ability to damage, but not the ability to kill. When you extend the bor down to 10 tefachim, you've now changed it from just a damaging bor into a killer boar. That change is significant enough that you become the Baal HaBor, and when you become the Baal HaBor, you're now both responsible for the death that happened in the boar as well as the nezek that happens in the boar. You've taken out the ownership or the responsibility of the first one who dug here, and it all now settles with the second one who made the significant change in the boar. On the other hand, Rabbi bifurcates the din and says, wait a minute. Legambe Nezek, the first guy was already chayav for damages to any animal that fell in the boar. So here, when he extends it from 9 to 10, nothing changed as far as Nezek is concerned. You're chayav for Nezek at 9, you're chayav for Nezek at 10. And so therefore, their joint responsibility remains. You don't take away anything from the first individual because he was already chayav in Nezek. So now they become partners in being liable for that Nezek. On the other hand, with regards to Mitah, this individual did something that was significant or changed the dynamic here. Until now, the boar could not kill. He now made it into a killer boar that he himself did, and he is solely responsible for. So according to Rabbi, the second guy will be chayav for any deaths that take place in the boar, but any injuries that take place in the boar, both the first and second parties will be jointly liable for that because they both contributed to a boar that does damage. So now going back to what the Gemara said before, when one guy dug five and the other guy dug five, then are they really shutafim? So Gemara says that works well according to Rabbi, and then Izakim. Rabbi, in his Shitu, says for Nezek they are partners, then you're right. If one dug five, the second one dug five, they'd now be partners for the liability of Nezek. But if you have a case where you're talking about Mita for Rabbi, the one who dug the first five is out of the picture. It's only the guy who dug the second five and brought it to Ten Tvachim. He's going to be the sole party that is responsible over here. So there's no longer Shutafin over here. So that we can't explain. Or according to the Rabbanan, whether it's the Mita or the Nizakim, they say when you move from whatever the number is below 10 to above 10, whoever brings it over the threshold becomes the Bala Bor or the responsible party over here. So if the first guy dug five, fine. Until that point, he was Chayav Nezek, not Mita. The second guy comes along and digs five. He makes it into a tenth fucking boar. Now he's responsible both for the Mita and the Nizakim, and the first guy's out of the picture completely. So in all those scenarios, where is the shutafut here? Where is the partnership that exists? Because the first guy gets eliminated from the case. And that is the answer of Rabbi Yochanan, that the case here is where they jointly created the boar, brought it to that final stage of tenth fucking. And that's why they are jointly liable over here. Now the Gemara says, my time at the Rabbanon. So what's the reasoning behind the Rabbanon Shita that the change from 9 to 10 changes the ownership? Damakra. Ki yiftach v'chi yichra. This is what we saw in yesterday's daf. They have the duplication of Lashon, which seems unnecessary, to open the bor, to excavate or quarry the bor. Imal p'ticha chayav, for simply opening or uncovering it, you're chayav, al kriya lo koshekein. Then for digging it, aren't you certainly chayav? Elavi kore achar kore comes to teach you that to be mechayev or bring a liability to someone who digs or excavates after someone else has already dug. Shilisilek maser rishon to teach you that the second one who digs takes away or eliminates the action of the first party. Rabbi amar lecha hanu mitzvach tzriche kidamrinon. And Rabbi will answer like Rabbi Akiva did in yesterday's daf that you need them because it teaches you a chiddush by all of them whether it's sufficient just to cover them, or is there responsibility for uncovering it? That's why you need kiyuftach kiyichre. We spoke about that yesterday's daf. So Gemara says, "Rabbanon nami mitzvach tzriche." Wait a minute, the Rabbanon also need that limud. So it's not so simple that they have this kiyuftach and kiyichre available for limud. Elohainu time the Rabbanon. This is the reasoning behind the Rabbanon's position. Amar pra kiyichre ish bor echad velo shnayim. It says when an individual digs a bor, ish means one. So there's only one responsible party here, not multiple responsible parties here. Virabi, haumi baile, that you need, ki ichre ish bor, velo shor bor. That we used already as a limud, that only when a man digs a bor is he responsible for it. But if an animal digs a bor, then you're not responsible for it. Virabanan, the Rabbanan also need that limud, shrei ish bor tive. The word ish bor is written twice in the pasuk, because of the way that it says, v'chitach ish bor. Okichre ish bor. So is ish bor is written twice. So one ish bor teaches you ish bor velo shor bor. The other one teaches you ish bor and not shnayim, or not more than one. There's only one individual who's responsible over here. But Rabbi, how does he deal with the fact that it says ish bor twice? Adiktiv hai, ktav hai. It's a parallel structure. It wrote ki yiftach ish bor. So then when it came to ki yichre, it had to write ish bor as well. Not because it's trying to teach you any information from it, but simply to parallel the structure of the kiyiftach ish bor. And so you can't learn anything from the second ish bor because it's just a linguistic addition to the pasuk. It's not open for a limud. Now the Gemara says, okay, I understand the Chachamim's position here that it says ish bor that a single individual is chayav, but how do you know which of the single individuals is chayav? I have two parties here that are responsible. One dug the first five tfachim, one dug the second five tfachim. You're telling me that the second party is the one that is liable over here. What happened to the first party? Why don't you say the first party is the one responsible and the second guy's off the hook? How do you know it's to make the second party responsible and not the first party? It says, Lo sakadatcha, you wouldn't think that. Damar kra, vameit iyelo. The pasuk says that the mate, the carcass, belongs to him. How would the kavid mita? The one who caused the death, he is the responsible party over here. It says, Vaha meiti yelo, mi baile kedurova. Vameiti yelo. We have a number of drashot that we made on that pasuk, but in the main drashot that we saw earlier in the mesechta, is damarova, shor psulei amikdashim shnafal labor, patur. Rava says that a shor, that is psulei mikdashim, which for all intents and purposes is chulin, and you're allowed to eat it. It has certain restrictions associated with it. One of those restrictions is la'achilatcha v'lo l'kavecha, that you're allowed to eat it, but you're not allowed to feed it to your dogs. Which means that if the animal dies, the psulei mikdashim dies, it's asur behana'a, and you can't give it to your dog to eat the nevelo. So here too, here you cannot carry out v'ameit iyelo when it comes to psulei mikdashim, because if the animal dies, it's asur behana'a. And since you can't accomplish v'ameit iyelo, therefore, the parties are not going to be responsible. So we have different pturim that we speak about. You have a ptur of hekdesh. That's because it says shor ve'eyu, v'lo shor shel hekdesh. Psulei mikdashim, which when a shor gores them, is chayav for it. When it comes to bor, it's ptur because of this gezerat ha'ketuvah of a mate yelo. That the mate has to go to the mazik. But here where the mate, you can't get hanor from it, it can't go to the mazik. And for that reason, a psulei mikdashim that falls into the bor, it's the balabor is patur. Again, psulei mikdashim could be like a bechor that has a mum in it that belongs to the kohen that's not going to go into the mizbeach. Or you have an animal that was consecrated to the mizbeach and then it got a mum in it and it was redeemed. Those are called psulei mikdashim. Where it says, so based on that, we already have a usage for a mate yelo. The mish mate shelo. Only someone who can keep the mate is responsible. Someone who can't keep the mate is not responsible. Amrei v'lav ha'melo shmat minah. Wait a minute. You can learn two things out of this phrase in the pasuk, va'meit iyelo, because of the fact it says va'meit. Va'meit means the one who killed. So that drusha comes out of the word itself. You don't need the whole phrase or va'meit iyelo to teach you that. Just the way that it is phrased shows you that the one who caused the mita, the one who caused the death, is the responsible party. And that's the second party here, because he's the one who brought it over the threshold of 10 tvachim. Now, the Gemara over here is in search of a solution as to how we have Shnei Shutafim, how do we have partners here in the Bor. The Baliat Tosafot point out that the Gemara had other alternatives to answer over here. It says, Velo Baile Meimar Shif Kiru Shutam Uboran. They didn't want to say it's a case where they had joint ownership of the property and the Bor, and then they were Mafkir both the property and the Bor, the Patur de Kuliyama, because everybody agrees there that you are Patur, because in that case, you did not dig your Bor in the Shutarabim, and you do not have ownership over the Bor. So you lack both triggers for obligation. One is that you own the boar, or the other possibility is that you dug the boar in the Shutar Rabim. Here where you had the boar existed with your property, and then you're mafkir the whole thing to the Rabim, over there, they're both now in the public domain, you're not responsible for it. So it didn't want to give the case of Hifkir Shutanu Boran, because that's Patur, the Kuliyama. That everybody agrees is Patur. So if that's the case, then what are you talking about the Shenis Chayav? There is no chiyuv over here. There's no responsibility at all. Another possibility is, if the first guy dug the bor 10 tfachim deep, and the second guy dug another 10 tfachim to make it 20 deep, which we're going to see in 1 second in the next piece of the Gemara, that you are chayav. Each one of them is chayav. They are jointly liable. The reason why I just would say the Gemara didn't do that is because the Mishnah seems to be talking about a standard bor. And a standard bor is 10 tfachim deep, not 20 tfachim deep. So therefore the Gemara is in search of a case where it's 10 tfachim deep, where you can have joint ownership of the boar, and the Mara solved that problem by having them jointly bring the boar to that point of 10 tfachim. And even though the Chachamim have the drusha of ish boar, that only can be one unique responsible party, that's in a case where each party acted independently or zechazeh. But where they acted bevat achat simultaneously, they jointly become the singular party that is chayav over here. Now the Gemara brings it bright. Tanurbanan, echad ha'chufer bor asara. If a person digs a 10 tefachim deep bor, that means that he's chayav for nezek and for mita now. U'ba'acher v'ishlima l'kaf. And then you have another person who dug it down another 10 tefachim to make it 20 deep. Ba'acher v'ishlima l'shloshim. And then another guy dug another 10 tefachim down to make it 30 deep. Kulan chayavin. They have joint liability over here. Now, most of the Rishonim, like the Balei Tosafot over here, suggest that when we say 10, 20, and 30, that is lav dafka. But rather, as he says over here, v'hu adin liyud aleph. If you dug 10 and then the next guy made it 11, he'd also be jointly liable over here, because once you cross over the threshold of 10 tvachim, you're already in a bor that is lemita. So then the each addition over there just serves to exacerbate the situation or add on to the ability of this bor to kill. And since you are both creating the same type of bor, a bor lemita, you become jointly liable for the mita. Similar to what the Chachamim say before. Even the Chachamim agree, if you take a bor that's 8 tefachim deep, and then the next guy comes and adds a tefach to make it 9 tefachim deep, the Chachamim agree that you're jointly liable over there for the nezek, because over there, both of them created the same type of bor. It was a bor lenezek, and you extended it to continue to be a bor shel nezek. So in that case, you will be jointly liable. Same thing with regards to a bor shel mita. If it's already 10 tefachim deep, and you just keep adding on to it, then you're not creating a new entity, you're just adding on to an existing structure or type of bor, and therefore you will be jointly liable. That's the way the Balei Tosafot explained over here in many of the Rishonim. What's interesting over here is there is a Tosafot back on the top Tosafot on Yud Amud Bet that speaks about this issue. And over there, the Balei Tosafot disagree with what the conclusion of the Balei Tosafot is over here. And over there he says that if you simply dig from 10 Tefachim down to 11 Tefachim, the guy who added on a tefach is not going to be chayav. He didn't do anything, like you're suggesting. The boar was already a killer boar at 10 tefachim, and therefore when he brings it to 11, he hasn't done anything that changes the dynamic of the boar. He equates it to a case where you have a large fire, a large pyre, and a guy throws a little twig into it. Now you're going to say he's responsible for the fire spreading or for the whatever the fire does? His little twig didn't make a difference. So you can't obligate him there as being a partner in the fire when he did something so insignificant. And same, until he puts in significant fire water or causes the fire to spread, then he could be liable or he could be responsible. But without that, he's not going to be responsible. And therefore, back there, on Yud Amud Bet, Tosafot differentiates between a boar that was 10, that one extended to 11, versus a boar that's 10, that one extended to 20. He says the difference being is how significant the action is that you did. Going from 10 to 11 is not a significant action. Therefore, the second guy is not going to be liable or chayav. And then going from 10 to 20 is a significant difference in the boar. The likelihood of the animal dying in 20 is definitely higher than that which is in 10. And for that reason, he now becomes a joint partner or jointly liable for the death of any animal there. And the same is true with the next one who digs it from 20 to 30. 20 to 21 wouldn't make a difference, but 20 to 30, that's considered to be significant. What is significant? The Balei Tosafot back there seems to say 10 tefachim. The original size of the bor that's deemed for mita, if you add another one of those sized borot to the depth here, that will make you jointly liable with the original person. So that's the threshold for significance according to the Balei Tosafot back on Yud Amud Bet, although the Balei Tosafot over here don't make that differentiation, and simply say that 11 to 10 is just as bad as 20 is to 10. Firmino, is that really true that there's joint liability over here? Don't we have a case? Echad achofer bor asara, one who digs a bor that's 10 tefachim deep, uba acher, and then another individual comes, visied vikied, he goes out and he plasters the bor, and then he draws pictures in the plaster, or makes protruding pictures in the plaster, acharon chayav, the latter party is chayav. So now, what's going on over here? You have the first braita, which seemingly indicates that anytime you add something to the bor, you become jointly liable. In the second case, here we have somebody add something to the bor, and yet only the second person is chayav, the first person is off the hook. Lema harabi harabonon. Let us say that these two braitot, which seemingly express different positions, are actually the result of that machloket that we saw before between Rabbi and the Chachamim. Meaning that the one that says you are chayav is Rabbi. Rabbi who says whenever you are jointly responsible for whatever happens in the bor, then you share in that responsibility. So even Rabbi, according to Rabbi, if you dug the bor from 9 and you made it into 10, you are the sole responsible party for mita, but for nezek, you are jointly liable. And that's the same thing that's being expressed in the braita that have 10, 20, and 30. Whereas the braita that says that if you come and add on to the bor by plastering it and putting pictures in it to narrow the size of the bor, in that case, only the acharon is chayav. Only the latter party is chayav, not the first party. That's the shita Rabbanan. who say if you do something significant within the bor, then you become the sole responsible party for the bor, right, that happens in the bor. Amar Rav Zvid. Rav Zvid says, ha veha rabbonon. Both of those brightot are authored by the rabbonon. Ad kan lo kami rabbonon acharon chayav. When did the rabbonon say that the latter party is chayav? El hecha dulo avad kama shiur mita. That's only when the first one didn't do or make the bor into a significantly deep bor to kill. But then the second one came along and pushed it over that threshold because he made a significant change in the type of bor that it is. He becomes the bala bor and the second guy's chayav. Ohecha davad kama shiur mita. But in the case where the first one already dug it down to 10 tefachim, afil rabbanan moldu dukulan chayavin. The rabbanan agreed that everyone is chayav there because he didn't change. The latter party didn't make a significant enough change to take away the responsibility of the first party. And so they're going to be jointly liable. Va, siyed vikiyed, deka avad kama, shur mita, viktani acharon chayav. Wait a minute. If that's your explanation over here, then how do you explain the second case? The second case is where the guy digs a 10 tefachim deep bore. The other guy comes in and plasters it and puts on these pictures on it. So the first guy already dug or excavated a boar that is 10 fucking deep. A killer boar is already there. And then the guy who puts on the plaster afterwards is just making a bigger killer boar. Why is that the case? Amrei, hatam shelo yabo hevel lemita. In the first place, the boar had enough ventilation. As Rashi says over here, that the width is greater than the depth of the boar. That means that it has proper ventilation. There won't be hevel. And then this party who comes in and adds the plaster to the walls and the pictures to the walls narrows the bor to the point now that he generates the hevel inside of it. And that's why the second party has changed the bor from being a non-killer bor, the gabe hevel, now into a killer bor of hevel. Now, what's interesting over here is that the Gemara seemingly is saying this within the position of Rav. Gemara here seems to be discussing Rav's position that hevel is the main aspect of the bor that you are responsible for. And here the Gemara is explaining the Shita Rabbanan within Rav's position of hevel. So from this, some Rishonim conclude that even though generally when we have a Machloka Draven Shmuel Bedinim, that the Loch is like Shmuel, maybe the Loch here should be like Rav, because the Gemara is speaking within the position of Rav and has a Shakla Matayra within the position of Rav, which seems to indicate that they believe Rav is the correct position. Rashi points out over here that the question could be even according to Shmuel's position, which is the fact that Shmuel could say that the case here of the boar is a boar that's filled with mattresses or pillows, and a case where there is no chavata. Because remember, Shmuel agrees with Rav that Hevel does have impact, but he also thinks that chavata has impact. So if you eliminate the chavata from the case by making it to a soft landing in the boar, then this question could be equally as relevant to Shmuel as it is to Rav. And if that's the case, there's no proof from here that the locha is like Rav. Ikadamri, there's some that say Amar of Zvid, ha v'ha Rabbi, that both the brightot are authored by Rabbi. Hach tektani kulan chayavim shapir. The one that says they're all chayav, that's Rabbi l'shitato, that everybody's jointly liable if you didn't change the shema bor from the, or the type of the bor. Ha tektani acharon chayav, the second brightot that says only the latter part is chayav, kiron shelo yabo hevel lo lemita v'lo nizakin. The case where there was not a problem with the air quality, whether it's for mita or for nezek, meaning that it was a well-ventilated bor, and then the guy comes and adds on hevel both for nezek and mita, unlike the way they explained it by the chachamim. By the chachamim, it was a case where it could have had hevel the nezekim, but the guy came along and narrowed it to make it hevel the mita. Because with the rabbanan switching from a bor of nezek to a bor of mita, makes you solely responsible for the bor. On the other hand, here by Rabbi, there can be joint liability. So if there was already hevel for nezek, then when the other guy came and narrowed it and made the hevel there for mita, you still are jointly responsible for the hevel of nezek. So therefore, the way that he describes the case over here, that the achron is going to be chayav, is in a case where the first guy created a very well ventilated bor. Again, it was wider than it was deep. And for that reason, there's no hevel here whatsoever. You're not chayav for nezek, not chayav for mita. And then ba'cher bo sif bo hevel ben lemita ben nizakim. The new guy comes and puts the plaster on the walls and puts up the pictures. Narrows the board to the point where there's now hevel in there. Poor air quality that can both do nezek and the mita. And that's why the acharon is chayav over here, because he basically created the killer boar. The other individual made no bor, because it couldn't kill, it couldn't be mazik, and so therefore he didn't do anything that was problematic with the bor. When the next guy comes along and gives it the properties that it can both be mazik and it can be memit, because of the hevel increase there, then he becomes the party that's responsible for the bor. All right. What happens if an individual, instead of digging the bor deeper, it was a 9 tefachim deep bor, and then he adds a layer around the rim that makes it now 10 tefachim deep. That, banu l'machloket Rabbi v'Rabbanan. That is exactly the machloket between Rabbi and Rabbanan when you change a bor from 9 to 10 tefachim. Gemar says, pshita, of course, what is the question here? That's exactly their case. Going from 9 to 10, Chachamim say you become the bala bor, and you're responsible for everything. Rabbi says you're responsible for mita, but as far as Nezek is concerned, you are jointly liable. So, what I would have thought is that only when he digs the bor deeper does he become the responsible party, because his digging of the bor deeper adds on a tefach of hevel. And where does the shore die? The shore dies when it hits the bottom of the bor and where the hevel sits at the bottom of the bor. So his deepening of the bor was the proximate cause for the death of this animal, and therefore he's going to be the one who's fully responsible here. Avalamalo, when he adds on a layer on top, dolo havla didei kakotil, and then his addition was not something that created the hevel, but rather it blocked the ventilation. So your raising of the wall around the bor is a reduction in the ventilation that allows there to be more hevel below, but that hevel existed beforehand, and now all you're doing is not allowing it to escape. So for that reason, it's not his hevel that's killing the animal. Same alone, so that's why I would have thought maybe you're not responsible there from taking it from 9 to 10 when you had the layer on top. Kamash Malone, that you are responsible despite the fact that you're not the creator of the hevel at the bottom of the bor, but simply your blocking of the ventilation is deemed to be the equivalent of putting the hevel in there, because with ventilation there won't be any hevel. Your blocking of the ventilation basically generates or traps the hevel in there, and therefore you are responsible for it. Vayirava, tam tefach v'sileik avanav. What happens in a case where the individual seals up a tefach and takes out the stones? So now, in this scenario, mao, what's the din? Mi aminim mai da'avid shaklei. Do we say that if he dug a tefach down and he now sealed up the tefach that he added, or he built up another row of stones on the top, visi lake, and then he took them away, so then whatever he did, he now removed. So he took the bor from being 9 tefachim down to 10 tefachim, and now he fills in a tefach, so it's back to 9 tefachim. He removed whatever he added to the bor. The same is true on the top. If he added a row of avanim on the top, and now he takes off that row of avanim, is he now removed what he created? And that's what we're asking him. Might the Ovid chocolate, whatever he made, he took away. Odilma, nistalku, maser rishon. That the actions or the activity of the first party are gone now. When you took it from 9 tefachim to 10 tefachim, you became the bal habor. When you became the bal habor, the first guy's out, and he's no longer the bal habor. So therefore, the maser rishon, the first guy's gone. So now when you go ahead and take it from being a 10 tefach bor back to a 9 tefach bor, all you're doing is saying your bor is now no longer a killer bor, it's only a nezek bor, but it's your bor. It's not that now you're reverting it or returning it back to the original owner. The original owner is gone from the bor once you extended it and made it into a 10 tefach bor. And therefore it's all in his possession and all his responsibility. Teiku, that's an unresolved issue. We don't know what to say about that. When he removes or reverses the action he takes, is that as if he now is no longer responsible and reverts back to the original owner? Or do we say that his action took out the original owner, and now when he reduces it, he's simply changing the type of bor that he is responsible for here, but not taking away his responsibility? Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Amar Shmuel Bar Marta, bor shmoneh, you have a bor that is 8 tefachim deep, umehen shnei tefachim mayim, and out of those 8 tefachim, two of them are filled with water. So you have 8 tefachim deep, 2 tefachim filled with water, and then 6 tefachim that is empty space. Chayav. You are chayav responsible for anything that dies in there. My taima. Kol tefach de maya ketrei de yabasha domi. Every tefach of water has a multiplicative effect on the hevel that is there, and it's the equivalent of 2 tefachim of depth. So every 1 tefach of water is the equivalent of 2 tefachim of depth. So for that reason, you have now six empty tefachim, plus you have two tefachim of water, which is the equivalent of four tefachim of depth. So now you add the four to the six, you have a tenth tefach deep bore. So for that reason, you will be responsible over there because the mayim is an accelerant for the hevel, or it is precipitator of the hevel. So now you buy luhu. Now, can we extrapolate this din? Bor tisha, if you have a bor that's nine tefachim deep, umehen tefach echad mayim. And out of those nine, one tefach is water. So you have eight tefachim of empty space, and then one tefach of water. If you double that, it's two tefachim. Now you have ten tefachim. Mao, what's the din? Mi amrinan kevin delo nefishe maya late behavla. Maybe you only say that water has this duplicative effect on the depth of the bor when there's sufficient water, when there's at least a minimum of two tefach of water. When you have a minimum amount of water, like one tefach of water, it doesn't have that multiplicative effect. Odilva came into amik tvei, it behavla. Or maybe you could say here that the bor itself is deeper. I mean, in the case of the eight tefachim, it was only eight deep, plus you had the water. Over here, it's nine, physically nine deep, and then you have the water. So maybe then you could equate them. I mean, that because it's physically deeper, and you only have one tefach of water, the two of them together could generate the additional hevel. Then, what about bor shiva? Umayen shloshat tefachim mayim. What happens if it's a seven tefach deep bor, with three out of the seven tefachim being water? So again, if you do that, you have four tefachim of empty space. You take the three and you double them, you have six, so that's ten. Mi amrinan kevin denefishe mayim tvei it behavlo. Do we say the more water that's there, the more hevel? Meaning that it really has this exacerbating effect on the hevel. O dilma kevin delo amka late behavlo. But over here, maybe there is no hevel because the bor itself is only physically seven tefachim deep, which allows for better ventilation, and there can't be hevel there no matter how much water you add. Teku, again, unresolved issue. So as far as eight tefachim with two tefachim of water, there we would say that there is sufficient depth in order to be chayav. We just don't know how to extrapolate that din to a case of nine tefachim and one tefach water, or to seven tefachim and three tefachim of water. Vaymine Rav Shizvi Mirabah. Yerchiva mahu. What happens if the bor already exists, and it's a killer bor, and then this individual comes on and expands the width or the entrance to the bor? Amalei, hare mi eit havlo. He says, why should he be responsible over here? By widening out the bor, he actually reduced the impact or the concentration of the hevel. There's better ventilation now. So amalei, adarabah, hare kirev hezeka. What do you mean? Okay, yes, he reduced the amount of hevel there, but he also increase the amount of damage or possible damage that could happen here because of the fact that there's a wider opening. There's a wider space that is problematic now. Elama Rav Ashi, Nechse Anon. Vashi says, let us look and see. If it died because of the Hevel, Hare Meyeh Tavlo. Then he reduced the Hevel that was there and he should not be responsible. Iba Chavota Meet. If he died from the impact of falling into the bor, Hare Kiriv Hezeka. He made it that the hezek is now closer. He was the precipitating force that caused it to fall in here and have this kavata because he expanded the opening of the bor. Now the Bali doesn't vote. You can see that up top say they don't understand what the Gemara's question at all. This is such a difficult Gemara to understand because even if you suggest that the animal died because of the hevel and this guy by expanding the bor made it to a better ventilated location, still, the only reason that the shore is in that bor is because he expanded it. So even though, yeah, he opened up the ventilation, but he still is the proximate cause for the shore ending up over there. So Tosfos says, I don't understand the differentiation between the two tzadim over here. All right, we'll leave that in the background. But that is Tosfos' question on the case. Ika damre, amravashi, next day anan, imahai gisanafal, hare kirev hezeka, vimihidach gisanafal, hare miye tavlo. It depends which side the animal falls in to the bor. If he falls into the side that was the original side of the bor, then this individual didn't do anything wrong. He didn't increase the probability or cause the shore to fall into the bor, but he did reduce the hevel, and therefore he would not be responsible. On the other hand, if he, but shore fell in from the side that he expanded, then it might have been his expansion that caused the animal to fall in, and therefore his reduction in the hevel is not meaningful because he's the cause of the animal being there in the first place, and therefore he'll be responsible for it. So here you have two versions of Rav Ashi. The Aruch HaShulchan points out that he thinks that you could reconcile, and this might answer Tosafot's question from before, the question of why Rav Ashi has a different version here. And the question of whether we pass like the Lishna Kam or Lishna Batra, what the Aruch HaShulchan suggests is it depends on which side the animal falls in from. I mean, let's take a boar that is east-west, north-south, and then this individual came along on the eastern side and extended the boar out. So then, if the animal falls in from the west or eastern side, then the second Lashon of Rav Ashi is relevant, which is, if he fell from the west, the boar existed anyway, and his expanding of the boar only served to increase the air ventilation and reduce the hevel, so certainly he should not be culpable. On the other hand, if it falls from the eastern side, he might be the proximate cause of the animal being in there, and therefore he would be chayav, because the animal only fell in because he expanded on the eastern side. But what happens if the animal falls in the north or in the south? Now, on the northern side and the southern side, there is a possibility that they are jointly liable, or they're both the cause of the effect of the animal falling in. So over there, that's Rav Ashi's first Lashon, which is, test in that case is, did it die from the impact, or did it die from the Hevel? So that's the way that the Aruch HaShulchan reconciles between the two Lashonot, to explain it, depending on which side the animal fell into the boar. If he fell into the east-west, which is the expansion side, the eastern side was the expansion side, then we know that on the eastern side, the new, or the expander of the boar will be Chayav. On the western side, the original digger of the boar will be Chayav. And it's on the northern and southern sides where sometimes it may not be clear whether it's the expansion or the original boar, or it could be both of them that cause the animal to fall in. There the test will be whether the animal died from Chavota or from Havlo. And that's the way that the Aruch HaShulchan tries to bring in both Shitot of Rav Ashi over here to say that they're not necessarily arguing, but rather they're talking about different perspectives of how the animal ended up in the boar. Itmar. Boar she'omka k'rochva. You have a boar whose depth is like its width. Rabba v'Rabbi Yosef de'amrei tarvayu mishmei de'Rabba bar Barchana, de'amrei mishmei de'Rabbi Mani, chalamar le'olam yesh behevel, ad she'ei rochva yoter yeter omka. That there is always hevel until the width exceeds the depth of the boar. But if they're equal, there still is hevel. Chalamar le'olam ein behevel ad she'ei omka yoter al rochva. The other one says no, that there's only hevel when the depth exceeds the width. So that means that in the case where they're equal, there would not be hevel. So that's just a question of what's the default status when they are equal. Is the default status when they're equal that there is hevel? And then only if you expand the width would you take away the hevel? Or is the default status that there is no hevel there? And only if you then deepen the bore would you be chayav for the hevel that's there? Alar lava rishon velo kiso. Rishon meimat miftar. At what point does the Rishon, the first guy, discharge his obligation or become released of his obligation and pass to the second guy? Rabbi Rav Yosef, Damir Tavaru Mishmei de Rabba Barbachana, Damir Mishmei de Rabbi Mani. Again, the memoras quoted from the same individuals. Chalamar Mishmei Nicho Mishtamesh. That when he leaves the second guy utilizing the boar and he takes off, then the second guy becomes fully responsible. I mean, that the first guy was drawing water. Then he finished, and now he's leaving it with the second guy. So the fact that he left the second guy drawing water and utilizing it, then he is the party that is responsible for it. That the case is where he gives over the drawing bucket to the second guy. He was drawing the water with the bucket. When he's finished, he hands that bucket over to the second guy. That transference of the bucket is the indication of the shift of responsibility from the first guy to the second guy. So the machloket here is then, does the first guy become exempt and give all the responsibility to the second guy simply when he leaves him behind working on the boar and utilizing the boar? Or does he have to do some sort of formal action like handing the bucket over to him to take it from his possession into the other guy's possession or responsibility? Where it says, Kitanae, it sounds like a similar to a machloket tanaim that we have. Hamadle mayim in a boar. Someone is drawing water out of a boar. Ubachaviro vamar lo. Anachli vaniyad lemayim. The second guy comes along and says, leave me here, and I'm going to draw some water. Kevin shenicho, mishtamesh patur. From the moment he leaves him utilizing the boar, drawing water from the boar, he's no longer chayav or responsible. All the responsibility now sits with the individual who's drawing the water. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov ver mishim zolo dalyo. That it's only when he hands over the bucket does that transfer or the responsibility transfer. Now, what is the dalyo? I've been translating it here as bucket, which is the translation of the Rabbeinu Hanan, who says it's a natla. It's the drawing bucket that you use at the boar. So you holding the drawing book is an indication of you are the one now utilizing the bore, and you are the one responsible for ensuring that the bore is properly covered. On the other hand, Rashi over here does something strange, and he says, Dalyo kisui ha-bor, is the cover of the bore. So if the first guy hands the cover of the bore over to the second guy, and while the second guy is drawing his water, the second guy now is responsible because he has the kisui ha-bor. The kisui ha-bor is that symbolic transference of responsibility from guy number one to guy number two, because now the way to take care of this bore is to cover it, and that cover is now sitting with the second guy. That transference is what indicates the shift in responsibility, whereas the others indicate that it's just simply he's using it. The second guy's using it is enough to demonstrate a shift in responsibility. But my kamiflige, what is the machloket here in this breita? Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov savar yesh breira. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov thinks that there is a concept of breira, which is that we can determine what in a partnership each partner owns. And therefore, as each one of them goes in to draw from this cistern, whatever they're drawing out is actually the water that belonged to them. And it's their water. And so therefore, there's no passing of the baton over here in terms of responsibility, because each one of them, when they're drawing water, is drawing from their portion of the bore. And you're not taking responsibility for the other party's portion in the bore. Rabban and Sabre ain't Breira. But on that, say that there is no such thing as Breira. And therefore, when you're drawing out of the water, you're drawing out of your water as well as the water of the other party. And therefore, he becomes the equivalent of a shoel or a shomer here, and he becomes responsible for the bor. In the first case, when you're drawing your own water and he's drawing his own water, then you're not borrowing anything from the other individual, or not borrowing any rights from the other individual. And therefore, there's no way that you could say that the first guy is released of his responsibility over there. In the case where you think there is no breira, and then the second individual is drawing water, then his drawing of the water is as if he's drawing his water, plus the other guy's water is like borrowing the water from the other party. And there you could see a shift in responsibility from the first individual to the second individual. Vamar Avina Tamayu. This shita, or machloket, between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim is similar to their machloket with regards to the Mishnah in Nidarim, that these were two partners who are mudar hana'ah from each other. You have two partners that took nidarei isur hana'ah, that restricted their partner from getting any hana'ah from them. It was a quid pro quo, they did it to each other. Asurim lekaneis lechatzer. They can't enter into the courtyard that they jointly own because of this problem of the isur hana'ah. Each one of them, when they go into the property, that's the determined space that's theirs during that period of time. And therefore, they're walking on the 100% of the property that belongs to them. But my kamiflige, what's the machloket here? There is breira, and therefore each one of them is walking into the part of the property that belongs to them. Rabbanan Savri ain't breira. Rabbanan Hold, there is no breira, and therefore, when you walk into the property, you're always walking on the other guy's property. And since you are mudar hana'ah from the other guy, you can't walk in there because then you're violating your nether. Now, as far as the terminology here of breira or en breira, this is not your classic case of breira. It's not a classic case of when you're trying to determine something retroactively by saying, I don't know now, but later on there'll be an activity or an action that will demonstrate that whatever the status of the item was at the time that we're discussing it, that's what breira means. Breira means that there will be a clarification later on that will determine the status of the item that we're currently here. As opposed to the breira here and ain't breira, that's not the same type of breira over here. We're not talking about a breira where after the fact we're getting information that is going to change our minds about the current state. Rather, the breira over here is acting simultaneously with the activity of the individual. As he's taking it out, we assume that what he's taking out is his, and the breira is happening in concert with his drawing of the water. And for that reason, you either have to say that the term breira and ain't breira are borrowed terms that are being used, not in their exact meaning, but for a similar type of meaning. Or if you look at the Ran and the Dorim with regards to this Mishnah, as well as the Nemuke Yosef in our sugya over here, he spends a long time showing or differentiating between the breira and showing why the din is different. And because of that, it solves a problem, a big problem in terms of psak halacha, whether we're posek that there is breira or ain't breira, and this gemara in Nidarim. The solution to that problem is what the Ran does in differentiating between the breira here and the normal cases of breira. Samar Abulazar, a mocher bor le chaviro, person who sells his boar to his friend, given shir masar lo dalyo kana. When he gives over the bucket to him, he's kone the boar. Hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario over here? A boar is real property, and we know from the Mishnayot and Kiddushin that real property can be acquired in one of three ways. Kesef, shtar, and chazoka. So now, if he used kesef, likne bekaspo, then he acquired it with kesef. Kesef brings it into your possession immediately. Ibe chazoka, if he is acquiring it through a chazoka, likne bechazoka, let him act and do it in an act of chazoka, which either means to fix something in the boar, break something down in the boar, utilize the boar, something that demonstrates ownership over the boar. And shtar would be the same thing as kesef. If he is acquiring it through a shtar, the shtar should be sufficient and it should be acquired. If the shtar is not sufficient, then what is giving over the bucket do to compensate? So Gemara says, olam b'chazaka. It's a case here where he's trying to use chazaka, ubayla meimarle leich chazeku kane. And then the owner has to exhort this individual to go ahead and do the kinyan chazaka. It's not enough that he does a chazaka, but it has to be the leich chazeku kane. This action or this activity of chazaka will be meaningful. Either you do it in front of the mocher, or if the mocher instructs you to go do it, then that activity or that action is significant enough to acquire it on your behalf. Since we gave over the bucket to him, command the amarle leich chazeku kane domi. That is the equivalent of articulating leich chazeku kane. So here by the chazaka, you need that leich chazeku kane. It won't be present. He didn't say it over here, but the handing over the bucket is the equivalent of saying leich chazeku kane, and that makes it as if it was done in front of the mocher, as if he instructed you to do it. The handing over the bucket is basically say, go, take it, utilize it, leich chazeku kane, and it will fill in, it will compensate for the lack of a leich chazeku kane. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Nun Aleph Amud Bet.